Shakespearean tragedy. Introduction. Shakespeare wrote a number of tragedies, the greatest among which are Macbeth, Othello, King Lear, and Hamlet. Can the tragic experience as conveyed by Shakespeare in these tragedies be conceptualized into intellectually coherent system? To generalize, Sid Black was to be a fool. Moreover, Shakespeare's himself, as A.C. Bradley observed, had only a sense of tragedy, not a philosophy of it. Nevertheless, we certainly can arrive at a few factors which are shared more or less by all of great tragedies of Shakespeare. We can, as Bradley say, be able to descend on certain well-built principle which underlie almost every Shakespearean tragedy. Let us examine what those common factors are. The story of one man. A Shakespearean tragedy is invariably built around one pivotal figure, the hero, who stands as a colossus beside the many other characters of the play. It must be remembered that a Shakespearean tragedy does bring before us a very large number of dramatic persons. Their number is indeed much larger than that of the character in an ancient Greek tragedy, including, of course, the chorus. However, the stage delights always remain focused on the hero. Other characters also experience up and down of fortune like the hero, but their career remain in the background. It is only in the love tragedy, Romeo and Juliet and Antony and the Cleopatra, that one important is given to the heroine also. Her name is also a part of the title of the tragedy. Elsewhere, she is just one of the numerous minor characters. In one of his tragedies, does Shakespeare preeminently concern himself with more than two persons, suffering and death? The tragedy always ends in suffering and death, for otherwise it will not be a tragedy. Shakespearean tragedy depict always the suffering and death of the hero. If a play does not end in the death of the hero, it is not, in the Shakespearean sense, a tragedy at all. Therefore, Troilus and Cressida and Cymbeline, though they have some element of a tragedy, cannot be classed in tragedy. A Shakespearean tragedy is, in Bradley words, in noted comma, essentially a tale of suffering and calamity conducting to death. Note comma close. But the suffering does not befall in the every beginning of the fall. It starts only after the hero has committed a sin of omission commission. In the earlier part of a tragedy, the hero may indeed be happy and altogether unmindful to the suffering and the calamity which later would conduct him to the death. The suffering and the calamity which befall the hero are quite exceptional in their nature and magnitude. However, they befit the exceptional nature of the hero himself. They cause in the hero a great deal of mental agony, though not physical pain. The hero under their stress appears second in spite of his greatness. The hero capacity for suffering, Hamlet by his mental torture, by virtual lead on the rack. Othello experiences a tempest in very soul. Lear turns mad. Macbeth Macbeth lost all interest in life and is obliged to characterize it as a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. It may be pointed out also that the suffering and the calamity experienced by the hero are not limited to him alone. They draw within their vortex numerous other characters, and King Lear and Macbeth. For instance, it is not only the king and the Macbeth who suffer and die, but many other to like Cordelia in the former and Lady Macbeth in the latter. Thus, the last scene of the tragedy are scene of general woe. The hero, an outstanding figure. Outstanding figure. The hero who undergoes his never-breaking ordeal of suffering, culminating in death, is in Shakespearean tragedy always a man of an outstanding social status. It may be a king, a noble prince, a very high official, and so on. Thus, for instance, first Lear and Julius Caesar are kings. Second, Hamlet is a prince. Macbeth and Brutus are noble, and Othello is a general of the Republic of Venice. In his conception of the tragic hero as a member of royalty of nobility, Shakespeare conformed to the tradition of the ancient Greek tragedy as exemplified in the work of Sophocles, Aeschylus and Euripides, the ancient Roman tragedies and handled by Seneca, and even the tragic conception of the Middle Age as expressed by Chaucer in his prologue to the Monk's Tales, one of the Sainsbury Tales. Tragedy is to Saint and Sergeant story, as old book makan as mamari, of him that stood in great prosperity, and us a fallen out of high degree, into misery and in death were sadly. Werchedly. How and wherefore he in death wretchedly. Wretchedly. Is not stated. But what is of interest is that the hero has got to be a man of great prosperity and high degree. That is also true of all Shakespearean tragic hero. Shakespeare may be accused by snobbery by some. Why does he think? Some may ask that the fall of only a great man is productive of the tragic effect, and therefore fit for treatment in a tragedy. Is not a suffering of a poor and a humble person also tragic? Well, Shakespeare has his own conventional way of thinking. He might have believed that the fall of a poor and humble person is painful, no doubt, but it does not make for effective tragedy. The great man, he mere stunning and effective is his fall. As Bradley say, the advantage of Shakespearean conception of the tragic hero is that his fall is more bewildering and conspicuous as contrasted to his former prosperity. Moreover, his fate affects the welfare of a whole nation or empire. Therefore, his tragedy is more enveloping and widespread in modern literature. This conception of the aristocratic nature of the tragic hero has undergone a radical change in the tragedy of Tekyov and the novel of Hardy. For instance, we have tragic hero of very humble birth, the cause of suffering and death. Now let us consider the cause of exceptional suffering and calamity which conduct the tragic hero to death. It is a malignant destiny or his own character which leads him to his doom. His question cannot be very partially answered. We cannot say that it is destiny or character which is wholly and slowly responsible for his downfall. It is in fact their combined action which spell death and destruction for the hero, the long with him many other. However, primarily it is his character, more exactly a fatal flaw in his character, which is responsible for it. In this respect, Shakespearean tragedy is different from the ancient Greek tragedy, in which the hero falls on account of the sheer malignity of the gods who govern everybody's destiny. Thus showing the helplessness of man before the powerful force of the overruling fate, gods and whatever extra terrestrial power that be. Shakespearean tragedy is much less fatalistic in conception. It does not echo the idea expressed in the following well-known line: as flies to wanton boys are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. Shakespearean tragic hero is good, but he is not perfect, nor is he a superman like a Marlowian hero, nor still is he a villain. His character is a mixed fabric, but with a strain of good much more numerous than those of evil. There is in him a curtain flaw of character which Aristotle termed hamartia, which provide the ground for the calamity which eventually overwhelmed him. All his goodness of character is of no avail. His action, which issues from the slightly flawed character, is what results in suffering and death. But for this flaw of character, the tragedy would have been averted. Bradley observed, Lear's tragedy is the tragedy of dotage and short-sightedness. Othello's that the credulity, Hamlet that of indecision, Macbeth that of ambition, Antony that of neglect of duty, and so on. If Hamlet were there in place of Macbeth, and vice versa, both of them could have averted the catastrophe. In short, the dictum character is destiny is fairly true of Shakespearean tragedy. Contributing factors. But apart from the fatal flaw, from other factor beyond the cane and power of the tragic hero are also responsible for the catastrophe. They are mainly two: the supernatural and the chance happening. These extraneous factors do exert some influence on the hero's destiny, even though basically it is own character which is to blame. The supernatural being, such as the ghost in Hamlet and the three witches in Macbeth, prompt the hero in each case to do what will be harmful for him. To quote Bradley, the supernatural, though it does not contribute to the action directly, it has an intensifying effect on the thou and the emotion of the hero. In the words of Moulton, it has no power except to accentuate what already exists. The witches, for instance, do not compel Macbeth to murder Duncan in order to seize the throne. They only exploit that ambition which is already a part of his character. They only precipitate the doom by drawing out that flawed a part of the hero personality which hold within it the seed of tragedy. In the ancient Greek tragedy, we meet with gods and goddesses who actively participate in human affair and turns the tide against one man and other. In other words, the downfall of the hero depends completely or in a major part on the malignance of the supernatural force. But in Shakespeare, the supernatural force stands aloof from the arena of human activity. They are a spectator, though they may at times precipitate the doom which mainly arises from the action of the hero issuing directly from his personal character. The same is true of the numerous chains happening in Romeo and Juliet. It is by chance that the hero does not get the friar's message about the position, and the heroine does not awake from her long sleep a little earlier. In King Lear, it was by chance that Edgar could not reach the prison earlier than the hanging of Cordelia. It was by sheer accident in Othello that Desdemona dropped her handkerchief at a crucial moment in Hamlet. It was a chance that Hamlet's ship was attacked by the pirates so that he was back in Denmark. So the element of chance is there in Shakespearean tragedy, but it is not so wrong as to overshadow the responsibility of the hero is bringing about the own doom. Shakespeare uses it quite judiciously, neither does he employ it. To quote Bradley, to frequently to be credible, not to rarely to be altogether unnatural. The conflict in Shakespearean tragedy. The conflict in Shakespearean tragedy is the essence of the whole drama. It may be justly said, no conflict, no drama. This conflict is of two kinds, both of which generally go on simultaneously. They are, first, the external conflict, in which the hero and his party are pitted against their antagonist. Second, the internal conflict, which goes on in the mind and soul of the hero. This conflict is between attitude, loyalties, conception or passion. Antony's mind in turn between the opposite poles of love and duty, Macbeth between those of ambition and duty, and so on. The hero ultimately gives way under the strain of these conflict. He suffers both externally and internally. The progress of Shakespeare as a tragedy writer of characterized by his gradual shifting of the site of tragic conflict from without to within. In Romeo and Juliet and Richard II, the conflict is almost entirely external. In Macbeth, Hamlet and Lear, it is both external and internal. In Othello, it is predominantly internal. In Coriolanus, it is almost completely internal. It is in his internalization of the tragic conflict that Shakespeare registered a big advance over his contemporaries and immediate predecessors. The moral order of Shakespeare's tragic universe. The moral order of Shakespeare's tragic universe. Shakespeare in his tragedies does not adhere to the doctrine of poetic justice, which requires the dramatist person to be rewarded or punished in rigid commensuration with their merits and demerits. Of course, the hero dies on account of some flaw, even if it is a very minor one in his character. Even then, the suffering undergone is more than is justly merited by him. Like Lear, it is more sin against than sinning. Moreover, along with the hero, some perfectly flawless and innocent people also die. Cordelia dies with Lear and Ophelia with Hamlet. Why is it so? The answer is that the ultimate power is in Shakespeare's tragedy universe in neither wholly fatal nor wholly moral. It is where wholly fatal is would have hurled destructions indiscriminately on everybody. If it were wholly moral, it would have dispensed perfect justice. However, this power is predominantly moral, for it does distinguish between good and bad. No evil character does ever go unpunished in Shakespearean tragedy. But evil has a widely destructive power. It is self-destructive, but it pulls into the destruction some good also. The total impression left on the reader or the spectator is not pessimistic but piteous, fearful and mysterious. Moreover, we are not completely snogged at the death of the hero, for in his death the rises to a nobler plan. Lear particularly undergoes a sea change. The mellow Lear of the last scene is a completely transformed version of the tempestuous Lear on the first scene. The topic Shakespearean tragedy is over.